Shalom, shalom. This is Dr. Kiva Gamlil of B'nai Noach Torah Institute and Ruach HaOr Audio Visual Learning Library. Thank you for joining with me. This is the fifth discussion of Jesus' birth as viewed from HaTorah, and this particular discussion is entitled The Holiness of God in Marriage. Dear ones, when we think of the holiness of God in marriage, it's really important to understand how HaTorah views engagement and marriage. And in this particular case, because we're dealing with an incident that's several thousand years old, we have to understand how engagement and marriage worked in the Jewish community 2,000 years ago. Now, I know there is absolutely no reason for anyone that is not Jewish to have any idea whatsoever of what happens in the Jewish community. So we need to explain that so the whole process will make more sense. Several thousand years ago, when the young people wanted to wed, there would be a period of engagement. The engagement period is called arusin. And normally, arusin, which means engagement, lasts for less than 12 months. However, we do have a case in HaTorah, in Bereshit, in Genesis, where Yitzhak took Rivka. Now, we know that Rivka was only 3 years old. And we know that they had an arusin. They exchanged rings. They had a ketubah. A ketubah is a prenuptial agreement written and signed in front of witnesses. So the rings are exchanged in front of witnesses, and the ketubah is written out and signed in front of witnesses. Then there's wine and blessings. Then a period of time passes. And during this period of time, Yitzhak and Rivka were married, but they did not consummate their marriage with a physical act. They were married by a piece of paper, by a document, and by their agreement to abide by that piece of paper. That's called arusin. After 10 years, when Rivka was a mature lady, then they had the kiddushin, which was the consummation of the marriage, a physical consummation. So, we have an example of this happening in HaTorah. And we know that 2,000 years ago, the way that marriages happened was there was an engagement. Before the engagement, when a young man was prepared to marry, or a young woman, the parents would speak to the local community and find if there was anybody that might be suitable for their child. And when a suitable candidate was found, the parents would get together and they would discuss their ideas, their thoughts, their observances. And if everything was in line, they would, of course, do some research on each other and some investigating on each other. And after the research and investigating of each other, if they looked like they had an agreement, depending on the custom, the children may meet in a public place under supervision, or the parents may simply have an arusin. And either way, what would generally happen is the meeting together in a public place would eventually lead to the arusin, the engagement, or the parents would make the announcement and the children would meet for the first time at the arusin. There are different customs involved. In this particular situation, however, there are some things that really didn't change much. The arusin, which is the engagement, followed by the kiddushin, which was the consummation of the marriage. So here, the young couple comes together. They have the arusin. They exchange rings in front of witnesses. They sign the ketubah, which is the prenuptial agreement, in front of witnesses. They have some wine and say a blessing. They're married. They don't touch. They don't kiss. They're not alone together. They go their separate ways with their parents. If it turns out for example, that a young person, like in the case of Rivka, her father Bethuel died. And so the elder brother, who was Laban became the one responsible for helping to make the arrangements for Rivka to be married. And he took over the father's responsibility. So what we're saying is that if there's no father, there's always a uncle, a brother, a individual that is responsibly involved with the children. The children are not allowed to be alone before they have kiddushin, and they're not allowed to be in private, and they're not allowed to travel by themselves. They would always be under supervision. In the case of Jesus and Mary, we do not see any involvement of the parents or any relatives. It's all pretty omitted. There's nothing there about it. We can't see anything. But what we can see is this. The New Testament says that they had not had a physical act. And the New Testament calls them husband and wife. And if you look at it very closely, you'll see it says Joseph, Mary's husband. It says Mary, Joseph's wife. And so what we have here is we have erusin. We have two young people that have come together, and they have exchanged rings, signed a ketubah in front of witnesses, and had some wine, and were living separately. However, what we have is we have a different presentation. We have the New Testament saying that Joseph took Mary, his espoused wife. That means his erusin, his wife by erusin, to Bethlehem. And that was to be counted in the taxation. Now, dear ones, the very nature of what the New Testament is describing is not possible in an observant family. And I have to argue that Jesus would be from an observant family and Mary. Because if you were to say that Jesus was not from an observant family or Mary was not from an observant family, you would really be shooting yourself in the foot if you were a Christian, because you want to think of them as being the most holy of people, that Joseph was a very holy man, that Mary was a very holy woman, and that they were from very holy households. So, basing it upon that particular point, there is absolutely no way that holy people would allow their children, if they were from a righteous household, to travel by themselves. And in addition to that, if Joseph was from Bethlehem, that would also mean it's likely his parents and uncles and aunts and other relatives were from Bethlehem also. And still, we struggle with this issue of where are the relatives among their marriage. The New Testament presents this young couple as going off by themselves. It's not permissible according to how things are done in observant Judaism. Now, that's not the only issue that we have here. The next issue that we have is we have the appearance of evil. The New Testament talks about that you should avoid every appearance of evil. And what we have is we have Joseph finding out through an angel, allegedly, that his wife is pregnant, that God, the creator of the universe, who was all unto himself, who is Echad, has decided, God forbid, to violate his Torah that he commands people to observe, and that is to mix species, God forbid. And then, allegedly, Mary is with child, and Joseph finds this out, that Mary, your wife, is going to have a child through the Holy Ghost. So here's the question that we have to ask. If this were going to be the scenario, and we're not debating whether Mary was a virgin or not. Of course she was a virgin. We have no question about that up until this time. So what we have here, however, is we have an issue. And the issue is why would the holiest God, the standard bearer of all righteousness, impregnate another man's wife? Knowing that this would bring suspicion on Joseph, and the New Testament clearly says he was going to put her away because he didn't want her to be found guilty of adultery, God forbid, and to be stoned and to die. Dear ones, the point that we have here is we have evidence in the New Testament that clearly points to the fact that this was very abnormal. Why would God take another man's wife and for any reason impregnate her? Why wouldn't God first discuss it with Joseph or with Mary? It's because, dear ones, God did not do this. God did not violate his command of mixing species. God did not violate his command of mixing seed. It's against HaTorah. God wouldn't do that. So we have this particular issue. Then we have the issue of adultery. This is another man's wife. You just cannot impregnate another man's wife. The Torah teaches that if this were to happen, God forbid, then, of course, Mary would be in trouble, big trouble. Why would God place Mary in a position where she could die, where she could be stoned, where she could be accused of adultery? There's nothing joyful or happy in this whatsoever. If this were going to be the scenario, why not choose someone who's not married? Why not make this where all the sages, where all the people, where everybody is completely on the same page? There's very confusing information here. And that's what we're addressing. And that's what we're facing here. And that's what we're taking a look at here. So what we have is we have a young couple that went off together. And halakhically, they wouldn't be permitted to do that. What we have here is we have the absence of relatives, and that wouldn't be the case. Look at all the marriages in HaTorah. There's always relatives involved. No exceptions. But yet we have a situation here. I mean, look at Abraham, Yitzhak, Yaakov. They're involved in their children's weddings, or they're involved in their wedding themselves. So, you know, we have to recognize the parents are not involved. Then we have to recognize that God is being accused of something, number one, that he can't do because God is Echad and God doesn't have seed, okay? God does not reproduce, all right? Then we have the mixing of seeds, which God has forbidden to do. So we have a lot of issues here. Then we have the issue of adultery. The New Testament writers are placing Mary in a position where she could be stoned, where she could die because of committing an act of adultery. Having explained this, let's move forward a little bit now to the Kiddushin. The engagement is concluded. The day of the marriage has come, and the families are gathered together, and witnesses are gathered together, and the finalization of the marriage is going to take place. This is called the Kiddushin. One of the very important things that transpires at the Kiddushin is when the young couple goes into a room for the first time by themselves and the witnesses are stationed outside of the door. And on the bed in this private room is a cloth. And that is the cloth that later will be collected by the witnesses and given to Mary's father. And this is the cloth that says Mary is a virgin. So they go into the room. They consummate their marriage. After they consummate their marriage, the witnesses are stationed outside the door. There's no one allowed in or out. And then the young couple comes out, and the witnesses, they take the marriage cloth and give it to Mary's father or brother, a relative that can say, hey, this is the evidence of the marriage. What we have here is a very unique situation. The New Testament says that Joseph and Mary had not come together. They had not physically consummated their marriage. And so what we have is we have marriage by erusin. Now, if you have marriage by erusin, which is exactly what you have if in observant Judaism, you have to get a get, a Jewish divorce. You have to go to a bet din, a legal court of law, to break the arusin. And you can't just throw the rings on the table and say, it's over. You can't tear the ketubah up and say, I've changed my mind. You actually have to go before a Jewish court and have a get, a divorce. So what we have here is we have a young couple that the New Testament says has not consummated physically the relationship. So we know they're in arusin. We know that Mary and Joseph have not gone into the room privately with witnesses stationed outside of their door. We know that there's not going to be any evidence of the cloth that a virgin would bleed on when she's having her first physical relationship. So we have these issues that are very glaring issues. How would anybody that's a Christian know that 2,000 years ago, a young couple would go into a room, witnesses would be stationed outside, there would be the cloth that the young woman would bleed on, that they would collect this cloth. So what we have here is we have very solid evidence that really goes against what the New Testament claims happened. And we have tradition of how things are done that do not agree with the presentation of what the New Testament is saying. Now, having explained in a very basic way what happens, let me give you some references out of the New Testament. Matthew 1:18 tells us that Mary was espoused to Joseph. This is erusin, before they came together, before kiddushin. She was found with a child from the Holy Ghost. This is a claim that Christians make. We don't accept this in Judaism because we know God doesn't do this. And then 19 says, Joseph, her husband, okay, this proves they were in erusin. He was a just man, not willing to make her a public example. He knew she was pregnant. It was obvious she was pregnant. He could clearly see her pregnancy, as well as others could. So we come to the next point. The next point is, it was obvious in the community. It was also known in the community that they were not in Kiddushin. So under that type of situation, there would be very extreme consequences. Then we find that the angel in 20 appears to Joseph. And the angel says, not to fear, to take Mary, thy wife. Again, we have now Mary is identified as Joseph's wife. In 24, that Joseph arose and took his wife, and he knew her not till she brought forth her first son. They went to Bethlehem of Judea. It's very obvious that Joseph would have relatives there, and there's nobody quoted as questioning what's going on here. Why is this happening? All the relatives completely disappear into the background, and we're supposed to believe this story as it's presented. So what we've done is simply show a few examples that do not agree. If you don't even understand Arusin and you don't understand Kiddushin, you can certainly see what wife says, and you can certainly see what husband says, and you can certainly understand what that means, and you can certainly understand that if a woman's impregnated by somebody else who is not her husband, that's adultery. That's certainly a wrong. That certainly doesn't appear to be right. And if you'll just think back to the audio that we talked about, what righteousness was, what holiness was, and compare and say, would a holy God do this? And the answer is, of course, a holy God wouldn't. Thank you for joining with me. Shalom, shalom.